The president is looked upon to be the leader of our nation. This time of year can add to the duties. Happy times like the lighting of the national Christmas tree. However, this time of year, at various points in history, brought challenges to the holder of the Oval Office. Joining us now to reflect on some of those moments and to discuss his new book, very interesting story about Mary Ball Washington, the untold story of George Washington's mother, is historian and best-selling author Craig Shirley. How are you today, sir?
Good, Chris. Thank you. Merry Christmas.
And same to you and your family. Craig Shirley, CraigShirley.com to learn more about Craig's latest book, Mary Ball Washington, as well as his previous this is a weird word to say these days, factual historical books as opposed to reinterpretive historical books, which you and I have both seen way too many of, I believe.
Yeah, I agree. I don't like committing the historical crime of presentism, which is taking the values and standards and morals of today and of trying to apply them unfairly to people of 200-300 years ago. I think it's wrong, and it's arrogant.
And before we get to your latest, Mary Ball Washington, the untold story of George Washington's mother, in the past you've written about some of the points that I referred to in the introduction about Christmas times that previous presidents had to face. And probably someone never, we all know December 7th, 1941,
right,
the Pearl Harbor attack. But we look at that as a one day. That was real close to Christmas. That could not have been a positive time in the nation and certainly in the Oval Office.
No, although it was a happy time. Winston Churchill made a surprise visit to FDR, was a guest in the Roosevelt White House over Christmas, and they had a very sumptuous dinner. They lit the Christmas tree on the south lawn of the White House, Churchill and Roosevelt together. People gathered on the lawn, if you can believe that, left their packages and their valises and briefcases on the road outside on West Executive Avenue, went inside and they sang Christmas carols. So they did have a very nice Christmas, even though it was obviously a dark time. You know, there were blackout sheets and blankets hanging all over the White House windows, and like it was in most of Washington at the time. But they did light up the Christmas tree for Christmas on December 24th.
You hear that story, and I think about how that contrasts with Jimmy Carter in 1979, where you would think that when challenges are facing a nation, you'd literally and figuratively want to shine a bright light. But that year, he chose to turn the lights off with a tree.
He chose to turn the lights off, and he urged all Americans to turn their lights off, which was, yeah, it was a very sad time. Of course, George Washington was at Valley Forge on December 25th, 1783, ministering to his wounded men, and Martha was there with him. On the other hand, Ronald Reagan, for his 8 years in the White House, he never went home to California. He always went home a couple days later because he didn't want to force the Secret Service agents to go to California and miss Christmas with their family. So he always stayed in Washington at the White House over Christmas so his Secret Service agents could be with their families on Christmas. So all presidents have different methods of interpreting Christmas or acting on Christmas. And some of the best examples are Roosevelt and Reagan.
And you mentioned, of course, Washington. We all know about crossing the Delaware River on that monumental part of the Revolutionary War.
That's right. Yes, that's right. Yeah, right into Trenton. That was on Christmas Day. It was a surprise engagement. The Hessians and the British officers were caught unawares. It was a complete rout. It was the victory, just the victory, that the Washington and the tattered revolutionary forces needed to revive the revolution and propel it to the eventual victory over Cornwallis at Yorktown.
But right in your latest book, rather than George Washington being the primary focus, his mother, Mary Ball Washington, is. Why did you choose to approach this person of history?
You know, Chris, that's a great question. You know, history has been very unkind to Mary over the last 250 years. She's been alternatively depicted as either June Cleaver or Joan Crawford. And the truth is neither was true, but some of the elements of both were true. She was a single woman raising five children in her 30s. Augustina died when George was only 11. And it was in a century that wasn't very hospitable to women. They obviously didn't have the vote, but neither could they even own property. Their job was to take the property left behind by their deceased husbands and then pass it along to their eldest sons or son when he reached the age of majority. So she did a wonderful job, obviously, raising her children, but especially George. And he became the standard when he becomes president of the United States, the standard by which every other president, every 44 other presidents have been measured as far as his faith and his intelligence and his humor and his principles and his character and all those other descriptive adjectives which he came to exemplify. And he knew this was important, and he knew he was setting a standard for future presidents. He was very conscious of his motions and his words and his deeds. I remember John Adams and the others, when he first became president, were in Philadelphia trying to come up with various titles for the new president. You know, his plenipotentiary, supreme commander of all he ruled, and all sorts of silly statements. And Washington finally says, no, the title will be simply Mr. President. And that became the official title for the President of the United States for every succeeding president ever since.
Craig Shirley is the latest book, Mary Ball Washington, The Untold Story of George Washington's Mother. CraigShirley.com is his website. And you're listening to Issues and Ideas. I made a joke a couple of shows ago about the holidays coming up and the conflict of Trump talk that could be taking place at the dinner tables around the nation this year. Whatever battle takes place today could pale in comparison to what could have happened if Mary Ball and George sat at the same table at a certain point in time, because Mary was rooting for the enemy.
Well, she was, but it was kind of low-key and subdued. She grew up in a culture that was British. She was a British subject. She went to the Anglican church. She was a regular congregant at the church. She grew up believing in the divine rule of King George II and King George III. So she was completely immersed, and the British and the colonies were part of the British, Greater British Empire. So she grew up, you know, believing in these things, and then to ask her in her 50s to say, no, everything you've learned for the past 50 years is now wrong, it's junked, we're throwing it out the window, and we're introducing a new paradigm something that, you know, nobody had really ever thought of before, which was self-rule, the rights of man and eventually women and all people, determinative government, all those things that were totally foreign, totally alien to people like Mary. So she probably was. There were French officers who went through Fredericksburg and heard her during the Revolutionary War and heard her express her support for the British crown. But she wasn't overt about it. She didn't knit socks for British soldiers or anything else like that. So it took her a time until her last meeting with George, when she was dying of breast cancer, and he was on his way to New York City to become the first president of the United States, where he visited her one last time. He knew she was dying. She knew she was dying of breast cancer. And at that point, she blessed him, gave him her words of encouragement, and expressed her pride in him, which I guess, I think all of us are in a lifetime and sometimes fruitless quest to please our mothers.
Yeah.
And he finally did earn his mother's approval.
Which probably in that point in time and the way it finally came through and that connection made, that probably gave him a lot of what he needed, the drive and the determination to keep going in the path that he did, because at that point his resume was stellar to begin with, never mind what he was still going to go ahead to do.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he was chosen unanimously to lead the Continental Army, chosen unanimously to preside over the Constitutional Convention, unanimously chosen first President of the United States, and then unanimously reelected as President of the United States. And where did he get these qualities from? Where did he get these high standards from? Where did he get his morality from, his honesty and his integrity and all those other things? His father died, and his stepbrother Lawrence George worshipped his stepbrother, but he was not there in Fredericksburg very often. So clearly, he got these great qualities from his mother.
And that's exactly where Craig presents with Mary Ball Washington, The Untold Story of George Washington's Mother. The potential of conflict that could have split a family turns into a story that helps you learn a lot about what drove and what empowered the man who became the first president of the United States, Mary Ball Washington, The Untold Story of George Washington's Mother. You learn more about it, get your copy through CraigShirley.com. Learn more about Craig's other great historical factual books as well. Mr. Craig Shirley, thank you so much for preserving and educating us with the meaningful parts of history, and thank you for being here today.
Yeah, my pleasure, Chris. Thank you very much.